Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good Wednesday afternoon. Welcome into Grant and Danny. It's September 18th, 2024, and you are listening live. Our show coming your way from our Half Street Studios in the Navy Yard near Nats Park. We'll be taking you up to about 6:30 tonight because those aforementioned Nats are taking on the New York Mets tonight at Citi Field. You'll hear the game right here on the Fan. We got tickets for you at 4 o'clock ahead of the Blitz to go to HF Festival, and at 6 o'clock before we say bye to Caps 50 Fest, starring Third Eye Blind. Danny, what's up?
Not much, dude. One of these weird days where I'm not sure how much it's supposed to rain. I don't know how humid it is. Like, everything feels like it's supposed to be comfortable outside, and it's gross and dumb, so it's much better inside. You ever experienced that where it's like, it's supposed to be nice, but it sucks out there. I want to be in here.
Why is it supposed to be nice?
Because I look at the thermometer, and it's like 68 degrees.
Okay.
And I'm like, yeah. And it's, the sun's not beating down on me. I'm like, that feels good. That's a dandy time. And I go outside, and I'm in a soup, and then it's like sprinkling on me. I'm like, get me back indoors.
So you're asking, have I ever experienced rain when it's about 65 degrees?
Yeah. Have you ever experienced that?
I have.
How many times do you think?
Let me check. I got to check my 31 times.
31?
Today is the 31st time.
What?
Yes.
You didn't know that number.
31 times.
You made it up.
I am wearing my Dylan Cruz Welcome to the Show t-shirt.
So you get three hits in a major league game, you get your t-shirt worn?
That's right.
That's the rule?
I was choosing my outfit today, and like a youngster going to school, I wanted to brag about my guy Dylan Cruz with a three-hit game. That was about all that went well for the Nationals last night.
Mm.
It was an ugly performance at the hands of the Mets. I was kind of hoping going into this series that they would play some spoiler. I would brag a little bit to some Mets fans because they're scratching and clawing for the wild card. You go in there, you take two out of three, you sweep them maybe. You make life a little bit harder. There's nothing I would rather do in this lost 24 season, Danny, than ruin the Mets' chances of making the playoffs. But it does not look like that's in the cards in this series.
My big things, win, lose, or draw. I want the kids to do things. Like, I want to see Dylan Cruz get three hits, James Wood to adjust to left field and keep swinging it, and CJ Abrams to finish strong. Mitchell Parker, who has been still a very positive story this year, kind of running out of gas, it looks like, as a pitcher. And also, at some point, I need a coach to kind of pull him aside and go, let's work on some pitcher fielding practice. Let's you and me just do all the things. Now, when the ball goes to the right side, that's towards first base, second base, just start moving towards first. Just get in the habit of doing that, for example. But he's just, from a pitching perspective, he's running out of gas a little bit, it seems like. Would have loved for him to have a nice ending to sort of validate all this. But again, success story on the whole. But those are the kind of things I'm looking for. And if you happen to beat the Mets, that would be a real shame.
Did not plan on starting the show here. But before we get into Jaden Daniels playing well and the Commanders getting their first win and going into Monday Night Football at 500, this story broke this afternoon, and I'm actually really intrigued by it. I just heard Byron mention it in the update. I'm sure you've seen this. Pennsylvania has sanctioned girls' flag football as a high school sport. So the story here is the approval from the Pennsylvania Interscholastic Athletic Association, statewide body governing high school athletics in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I think there are four commonwealths, of which Virginia is one. I think I have that right. Pennsylvania is another. But they have made flag football an official sport for girls in the nation's fifth most populous state, starting in 25-26 school year, coming up next year. Two questions. One, how ubiquitous will this become? How quickly? Because it's, with all due respect to states with less people in them, it's not like it's one of those random states that can just do something and no one notices. Again, it's the fifth most populous state in America.
It's not Idaho checking this out first. Yeah.
So to me, that moves the needle a little more. And then question number two, are we on our way to boys flag football at the high school level? And if that's the case, does that eventually cut into tackle football at that level? Because I'm thinking there's a parent listening right now who is letting their kid play high school football because they want to, but maybe the kid plays sevens in the summer or something and gets to a point where I can play football. Mm-hmm. I watch it on ESPN when the Drew Brees League has a national championship game, and it looks pretty fun, and I don't have to deal with potential head trauma or injuries. I don't know. It's 2024. What's it look like in 2034? That's what I always think about.
Yeah, where's the trend line going? So to your point, yes, because there's no – football is the only animal where there's no female equivalent, so to speak. So at a certain age, they tell girls, all right, thanks for playing baseball, because, you know, for example, there was a girl on my son's Little League team who was the best player on the team. Eventually, they'll say, okay, we've got something for you now. It's softball. That's what you do. It's the quote-unquote female equivalent.
Yeah,
you've got basketball, soccer, et cetera.
Who went to high school, there was men's and women's soccer.
Yeah.
There's baseball and softball. There's men's and women's basketball. Football, either you get the very rare story where there's a girl on the football team, which happens,
mm-hmm.
but there's not a team for you to compete against other girls. Well, here we go. Flag football, it's going to be happening in Pennsylvania, potentially, next year.
And this is a natural progression. Because, again, my son, there are a couple girls on his flag football team. We're trying flag football this year. So, like, these are six-year-olds. They don't know which way is up. And you tell them, snap the ball, and they literally try to snap their fingers with the ball in their hands. They don't really know quite yet, but they're learning. But if somebody really enjoys that, where can they go with it? Nowhere just yet, but it's going to happen. I mean, I think there's going to be a new, I don't say rash, but a new kind of paradigm or sort of a new outlet where things like, I know you joke, but things like pickleball are already varsity sports in Maryland. I think that's coming as sort of an alternative.
I'm sure it is.
I think flag football will be a thing. For boys, I don't know. I don't, because there are going to be places where it's still like a religion, like in Texas or Florida,
totally.
or maybe even Pennsylvania. But
I don't know that we'll overtake tackle football, certainly in our lifetime.
But I think it's coming.
At the high school level.
Mm-hmm.
But at the youth level, we're already seeing it.
Oh, 100%.
It is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And it's just normal. And I actually think it's smart. The data that we have at mm-hmm. our disposal right now says the longer you wait to go get into those collisions and to play tackle and to have any of the banging the head against the opponent, the better off you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I think flag football is really taking over at the youth level. How many girls do you think played flag football in the United States during last academic school year?
Oh, gosh. Any guess I'll have is wrong. I'll say 600,000. Across the country?
Yeah. 43,000 is the number.
See, I wouldn't have any basis for it.
600,000 is a lot of people.
Well, I mean, just on our little field,
yeah.
just looking around, where they divide a normal football field up into 10 quadrants,
yeah,
there were 15, probably. And that's
right.
From 4 to 6 years old. So I was trying to go, okay, how many counties? And I told you I was off.
Yeah, it was a great guess.
So I ruined the bit there.
Right? The point
I'm like, 10 million.
43,000 girls played in flag football in the United States in the school year last year. I think it's awesome. I think it's really, really cool. It's a good, smart idea.
100%.
And just as an example, and you can call me names if you want to, I don't think like my little Reagan, my little McKinley, I don't know that I want them getting tackled ever. I don't know if I ever want them getting into collisions. But if they want to go play flag football and get out there and show some athleticism and some twitch and some wiggle, go have fun. Now, the other side of it is I do think that the flag game teaches you all the skills that you need in a really, really safe and instructive and efficient way. Right? Without the bad, you get all of the good. Some of the lessons that you get in sports as a young person, mm-hmm. which you and I talk about on the show all the time.
Absolutely.
I think they are not even like helpful, but almost necessary in some ways growing up. Like, I want my kids to participate. It doesn't have to be in sports, but in something where you fail and where you get embarrassed and
yep.
where you get to a point where you've got to be the second best person at something in that room. And I think all of those things are actually really, really good, like being uncomfortable at times. That all said, I do just wonder if you could look into a crystal ball. If we've already seen it at the youth level, what's to stop it at the high school level from eventually being flag football versus tackle football? And then I think college football is always going to be a thing and pro football is always going to be a thing. I don't see that going away, but I guess you're just recruiting off of that. I mean, there's not really quote-unquote line play, you know, offensive and defensive for the big people in the flag game at this point? Do you go 11-on-11 with blockers at some point in flag football? Could we be trending there? I just wonder what it's all going to look like eventually.
No, it's a great question. I mean, again, the it wasn't available to me as a kid. There was no flag football. That did not exist. It's something that you played at recess.
I was going to say, when I was a kid, which is 10 years more recently, the only time I'd ever even heard of flag football was on the playground at recess.
Yeah.
That was it.
Like the PE coach would bring out the flags, or for somebody's birthday party, it's like, all right, you got to pull the flag, and everyone was just running around trying to do that to each other. Well, now it's gone from that to that's the number one easy option if you'd like to introduce your kid to sort of the world of football. And to your point, you don't learn some of the physicality lessons, obviously, like how to hit properly. You're not doing any of that, or how to block, but everything else that comes with it. And it's an invaluable skill set, because it's not just run with the rock. It's not just catch the ball. It's the spatial analysis that kids don't have, where I have to worry about not only where I am, where the ball is, but where the person I'm covering is. They don't do that naturally. And it's a great, sort of like microcosm type lesson for how to play all sports.
Think about where the NFL's going. So we've got the Pro Bowl now is flag football, literally.
Yep.
They play a flag football game for the Pro Bowl. And we're going to have flag football in the Olympics in the United States of America in 2028, coming up in 4 summers. I don't know if we'll get to have NFL players participate or not. I know that those players have been asking to participate, and I think there's a non-zero chance that's going to happen. But can you imagine what it would do for the game? If we're talking about the growth of flag football, let's say Team USA wins the gold medal with Tyreek Hill and Patrick Mahomes and Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, you know, fill in the blank, on the roster. Look at how big a deal those U.S. men's basketball gold medal games were when they were winning the gold several weeks back. And everybody was watching, and the frenzy. I just think the momentum would be over the top, especially if you use the pros in the Olympics. And I don't know why you wouldn't be able to. Maybe some guys are going to miss out on some training camp. I think teams would probably be okay with that for the growth of the game internationally in a sport where we're already seeing you play all these games all over the world.
Yeah.
But I just see the trend line. Like, people make their jokes all the time. We got guys lining up 5 yards apart on the kickoff. Let's just play flag football. That's ridiculous. These collisions are still violent. The game is still every bit as a physical.
Yeah, hold on, I have to go check on two in the hospital. I'm sure it's not violent.
We're going to be okay. But I do think between the Pro Bowl or the Olympics, like, the signs are there. There is a marriage happening between ball and the flags.
Totally. I got off my point a minute ago, but the thing I was going to try to say was it did not exist when I was a kid. Now that I'm an old, grown, pudgy adult, not only does it exist, but it's the number one option. So the trend doesn't just stop in that regard, right? Where people have found out more and more about safety, how much more accessible it is. I mean, again, the reason we're doing it this fall for my youngest is it's one day a week. There's no, like, schlep them around to practice. There's no, you know, crazy all elite stuff. It's you know, eventually it's going to be, you want to play flag football at the highest level? You're going to have to join this travel team. In order to get to that travel team, you have to do this travel team. It's going to be traveled like baseball, soccer, lacrosse, everything else. But right now it's the lowest stakes. Hey, man, this is a rec sport.
Yeah.
We're literally teaching you where to line up.
So did Good both luck. Of your kids play flag or just one?
Both. Okay. So my youngest is now doing it.
Got you. So have you watched any of the, I always reference it as, like, I don't know what it was, but ESPN2, middle of the day, that Drew Brees League?
Yes.
Where, like,
I didn't even know it was called the Drew Brees League, but I've seen it,
The best kids from Dallas are taking on the best kids from Loudoun County or whatever. It is crazy to me how good these kids are. Like, no exaggeration.
Yes.
They're just outstanding. But also, the diversity of the playbook, and they're running legit offenses, and they got their wristbands on, and they're looking down, like, running play 14, and they're running picks. And I mean, it's really, really legit. It's very clear to me. You cannot convince me that being exceptional out there doesn't help someone with aspirations of going and playing college ball.
100%.
Like, you're learning scheme. You're learning how to put defenders in a bind. I think all of the physical stuff, other than just wearing pads and throwing on a helmet, and there's a transition that has to happen. But I'm imagining if guys are playing at that level in flag, they're probably also playing occasionally with a helmet and pads on too. But I just think it's a really good preparatory ground.
No question.
Cliff on Twitter just hit me up, by the way, @GrantHPaulson. Danny's @FunnyDanny. He said Montgomery County has started girls flag football this year. It's already been approved by the MPSSAA, which I guess is the Secondary Schools Athletic Association. So I guess it's coming even into Maryland sooner than later, too. My point is, this is not going to be a one-off story. I think this is going to be a major trend. And for a long time, I viewed it in a way as a threat to football. And now I don't really view it that way. I think it's more a supplement, in a sense. It's additive. I'm sure there are people that will continue to clamor for the end of tackle football. But I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of philosophical point, because I think if it may siphon off a small percentage, like from tackle football players to flag football players. I see it, though, kind of as your thinking has evolved, I think mine has too. I see it more of a, we're actually just going to cast a wider net for all things football. In other words, I think there's enough people, like parents like us, where I'm going, I do not have a college football player son.
Yeah.
I can tell that right away. So why am I going to subject him to a bunch of headbutts and a bunch of crazy, you know, Oklahoma drills and workouts and things that don't make any sense for him to, you know, have a potential fun experience? There's other sports that I could do that with. So here's my barrier of entry. It's very low. We can get some of the benefits without all the violence, all the collisions. It'd be a different story if I had a linebacker jeans and my oldest was already benching 225 as an 11-year-old. We would have to do a different thing. But I think that is more welcoming to people as opposed to taking away from what already is.
I just find the global discussion on football my favorite, and according to the TV numbers, most of your favorite.
Lots of people's favorite
sport, yeah, as well, and where we're headed to be absolutely captivating. But that was big news that dropped this afternoon. Let's get into Jaden Daniels, who, as you heard Byron mention in the update, is the only rookie quarterback to ever amass 500 total yards, rushing and throwing, through two games without turning the football over. He is off to what you'd have to say is an encouraging start. He has been excellent on the ground, and he improved quite a bit in game number 2C in the field. I want to play some audio as we go on today from Dan Orlovsky. You liked what he saw, like we did in the second half of the game against the Giants here this past weekend. What's impressed you most so far about Daniels?
I think it's before now for Daniels. Like, it's very easy to be drafted as high as you were and be the second overall pick, Heisman Trophy winner, and you're heralded and everyone's excited for you, and to think, I've arrived. I've done it. I made the accomplishment. And I'm not trying to just kick a guy while he's down, but that's what I always felt about Chase Young. When Chase Young got here, it was, I did it, instead of, I've got work to do. And that's just always kind of how it felt from afar. I never talked to him personally, but that was just my impression of it, right? So Daniels, instead of saying, I'm done, like, here I am, I'm where I want to be, and that's that, now is outworking everybody else. Now is the key card guy. He's in first, out last. He's doing the things, not just for Instagram, not just to show one time that you got up before the sun did and, you know, you ran some stairs. He's really doing it. And it's the right attitude, the right mentality, the right sort of energy that he's brought to this organization that's inspired confidence in everybody else. And it's not just lip service. It seems like a real thing. And there are going to be struggles, and I think that's inevitable because it's really, really hard to do this for anybody, let alone a quarterback transitioning to the NFL. But to me, his approach, his temperament, and his demeanor, that's what's impressed me the most about him.
Yeah, all that stuff I kind of had figured out like you did in the preseason, so I'm kind of over that. I agree with you, for the record, that those are ultra impressive. I'm looking more now at the games, though. We're in season, two games in, like, what's impressing me? And I guess my answer to that would be, I like a lot so far how he has gone about threatening with his legs. We can continue to discuss how often he should run, and we could continue to discuss, and we will, whether or not he occasionally runs out of a clean pocket or runs when he shouldn't. But I think the threat of his legs has already made them a great running team. They were against the Giants, and we'll see if that continues. I think it will. But when you run for a $133 with B-Rob and over 200 collectively, this is shades of 2012 to me. It's happening again. And it's because he has pushed the opponent to the brink of being scared with his legs already by putting what he has on film through two contests. So that's what I've been most impressed by. We can open up the phones on this. I want to dive deeper into some of the things we've liked a lot about Jaden Daniels. But the MGM National Harbor listener lines are available for you at 800-636-1067. Is there something that has stood out to you or that you've really liked about Daniels to this point? We want to hear from you on GND next. Also, passing around the NFL is down considerably as we get ready for week three and Thursday night football. Why is that? I've got some numbers. I want to go over them with you next, Danny, right here on The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jaden Daniels and the Commanders are 1-1 as they get ready for Monday Night Football in Cincinnati. Through two games, Daniels has outperformed Caleb Williams and Bo Nix in his rookie class among peers, and he's stacking up decently among efficiency metrics for quarterbacks. What's impressed you most about the first-year Washington Commander? That's the question at 800-636-1067. Guy Lorien on Twitter says, maybe a backwards compliment, but I've loved how many yards he fights back for with sacks. Says, usually drive killers, not with him. And to that point, there have been a couple of near sacks where he gets back toward the line of scrimmage, 4, 5, 6 yards gained, and it's a -2 or -3 or -4 instead of a -7, 8, or -9. You saw Caleb Williams take a -16 on a sack in the opener for the Bears because he was just trying to do too much. He's running around. He's going backwards. And even if Daniels does the same thing, he's fast enough that he kind of gets the edge and he makes bad plays less bad, which is, I don't think it's a backwards compliment at all from him. I think it's actually a really observant good point.
So what it's beyond that, though. It forces, to your point, certain kinds of rush. Like the opposing defensive coordinators are yelling at their guys as they get leading up to the week to play Washington. You have to stay in your rush lanes. You can't lose gap focus. You have to do certain things this way. Well, that's limiting. Like, if you've got J.J. Watt, I don't want to limit him at all. I'm going to tell J.J. Watt, whatever you want to do is fine. We'll work around you, buddy. You can't do that against Washington, in theory. And that's an asset.
You were super impressed by a lot of the stuff that we saw all preseason in training camp. How about since the ball was put in the air against Tampa in game, what has stood out?
Accuracy. I didn't know that would translate. Like, when dudes are wide open at LSU, okay, you're hitting neighbors in stride or Brian Thomas in stride down the field. That's all well and good. But accuracy and ball placement, I've been pretty darn impressed with. Even as things speed up, and they do, there have certainly been moments, the first play of the season, that -15 fumble on a check down or the screen pass in his first preseason attempt that he threw 100 miles an hour, Schrader style, over his running back's head. There have certainly been moments where it's gone a little fast, but he's been pretty poised and has been accurate as a result.
When I went out to practice, the thing that blew me away was how many balls were exactly where they should have been. You know, I look at think about baseball. So we consider control to be throwing the ball over the plate. Command, another buzzword in baseball with pitching, is locating. So think about it like control is, do you walk him or strike him out? Is it a ball or a strike? Command is hitting the mitt within the strike zone. Mm-hmm. You can have control over the plate, but no command, where you're supposed to throw it up and in, and you throw it low and away, and it gets slapped, you know, the other direction or something, because that's the hot part of the grid for a hitter. Jaden Daniels has control, which is accuracy, but I think he also has command, which is ball placement. And I think that's not going away. Like, when they actually do throw the ball down the field more in the weeks ahead, which they haven't done a lot of at all, I think he's going to be accurate. He threw a great deep ball in college, and it's just part of his game. It was that way in practice. We've seen it in games now, in the, you know, 50 or so throws, mostly mm-hmm. underneath. I do think he's really, really, really accurate. I'm not as, like, blown away by the no interceptions. I know that keeps coming up. That's a really good stat. It's an important stat, and I'd rather him have no picks than picks. I think some of that, though, frankly, is a couple of things. Number one, they haven't really thrown balls into small windows, and they're not really pushing the ball down the field. I didn't count before the segment, but they're at roughly like 10 throws probably beyond 8 or 9 yards downfield through two games. So generally speaking, when you're throwing behind the line, at the line, stop and hitch routes, as long as you're not like getting undercut by a DB on an out route or something, there's not much of a risk for an interception. But I'll say in terms of the no turnovers, he's only had the one fumble so far. Mm-hmm. He's been sacked 6 times. Some of those are him, you know, going forward as a runner or whatever. There was only that one play where he dropped the ball kind of at his waist. He got sacked.
Yep.
Biadasz pounced on it. It's a small sample. It's only 2 games, but that's encouraging to me because a lot of times as a young quarterback, you can kind of panic and start patting the ball, and next thing you know, you start running, and someone hits you, and you fumble. I mean, there are quarterbacks who have fumbled a few times. I know statistically he's listed as having fumbled a few times. One of them was going out of bounds, remember?
Yes.
Another one's
the backward pass.
Exactly. Another one was actually a throw that they ruled as an attempt. But really, to me, truly, it's been like one ball security play mm-hmm. through 2 games, which is a really good sign.
And to your point just about the routes, it's been, I think he has one turnover-worthy throw. That's going to come when you don't have a lot of high-risk passes by design.
To me, that's a Cliff Kingsbury stat.
And I agree with that.
More than a Jaden Daniels stat so far.
And totally, I agree. Whereas you look at Caleb Williams, Bo Nix, I think I have 9 or so between them. And again, they're throwing a little bit more high-risk stuff more often, led to turnover-worthy throws and et cetera. So he's executing what's being asked of him at this point.
He's just been poised.
Yes.
You know, maybe there were nerves right before the Tampa game with the weird throw to Robinson to start or whatever, as there should have been.
Yeah.
You know, but I haven't seen moments where it looked at any point like anything was too big for him, which you didn't expect. He was the Heisman Trophy winning number 2 pick playing in front of, you know, 70,000 at a time in the SEC for LSU. Let's go to Tom in Waldorf on Grant and Danny. What's impressed you about Daniel so far?
Well, guys, there's a couple things that impressed me. One, when he got absolutely shellacked this weekend, and he was able to get up, brush himself off.
Good point.
He's been, you know, I hope he's going to slide more, run out of bounds more, but that impressed me. The ball placement, you know, not just being accurate, but knowing whether to throw it inside or outside to the receiver. That's actually, because the windows are so small in the NFL, that's a very big thing. But, guys, we still have to remember, he's got no touchdown passes, 0. And he's not good. He's missing people that are wide open.
Yeah, but I'll say this, though, Tom.
He's a rookie.
He's 2 games in. I don't mean to cut you off. I appreciate you. But I want to be clear about something because it's a great point. My goal in this segment is not to crown him, right? I think he has been great as a runner, fine as a passer. I think there, you know, anybody who's saying he's been awesome throwing the football, he had an awesome half against the Giants. The first 3 halves, I would not have considered him to have played all that well throwing the football. But it would be hard-pressed, I'd say. You'd have to be trying not to like what you're seeing through 2 games so far to not at least feel like this is really encouraging, that this young quarterback who seems like he belongs and is operating an offense that is the hardest to get off the field 3 and out right now because of his feet, isn't doing some pretty good things.
Yeah, and also would compound and add this. We know more now than we ever did, right? It used to be just guesswork where you go, he's missing open guys. Based on what? We don't know. Now we do. Now we got every throw. And if you want more, you can get more. You get more angles of every throw. You could figure it out. So we're very Jaden Daniels focused here in town, and we should be. It's Washington. He's the Washington quarterback, and he's a sensation. Go around the league. You want to tell me everybody that's gotten off to a great start is missing guys that are wide open. Everyone that's gotten off to a bad start is missing guys that are wide open. It's the percentage of, are you making more plays maybe than the next guy?
Yeah.
And to a degree, we're not quite there yet in terms of more than the next guy. But everybody every week, including Hall of Famers, including the best to do it, are missing open receivers all the time.
So we're going to have a bigger conversation about the passing being down in the league and why that is coming up in these next few minutes. I got a bunch of numbers. It is relevant and it's important, and I want to continue to make it part of the conversation. I can tell already through a few days, I don't agree and we'll get into this. You're going to care a lot more maybe about what's going on around the league. Like, I'm going to do the Dennis Paulson thing where I don't care what Jeff Howell's grades were. I'm evaluating my quarterback and my plays.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what we did with Taylor Heinicke, and it wasn't an issue then. And that's what we did with Carson Wentz, and it wasn't an issue then. So I won't 6, 7, 8 weeks from now be making excuses for him. I do think it's important to acknowledge trends, and I think it's important to, like, we just got out of an era where it was the easiest it's ever been to throw the ball. Maybe we're leaving that era. We don't know. But the numbers right now through a couple weeks are trending down. But if the plays are there to be made, they still need to be made, right? It doesn't necessarily matter if other people are missing them. If you got a guy 9 yards downfield that you misfire on, that's a problem. I don't think they've had a ton of those. What the caller might have been talking about is maybe not seeing something. It's going to come.
Sure.
You're not going to see. It's second NFL game. But we'll get into the trends around the league because I think that is super important. For sure. Here's what I'm curious about. Let's say he wasn't running the football at all. Let's say he was, I don't want to say immobile, but just a pocket passer. Through two games, what would we be saying right now? I do think the conversation would be extremely different.
Without a doubt. Because you wouldn't have had any offense against Tampa.
I mean, it's an odd hypothetical, but my point is just, all along I always said the legs are what gives him this super high floor, where as a passer on a 1 to 10, he's probably been a 5, something like that. And the conversation is like, whoa, man, look at this guy. He's the best of the rookies. Yeah, because he's a 7.5 or an 8 because he's been running really well. But if like Dwayne Haskins, as an example, didn't have that club in the bag, he's just out there. And Daniels, to me, already looks way advanced in terms of making throws and getting the ball out to guys and whatever else. But I guess my point is, do we want to have a conversation about him just throwing the football, or are we just going all purpose? You see what I'm saying?
Of course I do, yeah. And it's a relevant question. There's so much that goes into that. Like, I think the plan that they've had, Kingsbury and Company, has been smarter and better than what some of these other guys are being asked to do. Like, they dropped Caleb Williams in and said, be Caleb Williams, go, run all the stuff. And they've struggled. I don't think those struggles will continue forever, but there has been way more of a struggle. Same thing in Denver, where Sean Payton wants his offense run Sean Payton's way, and that's led to some really bad results for Bo Nix. Now, I happen to think Jaden Daniels is a lot better than Nix is and will be over the course of his career, but you can kind of see it. They're purposely avoiding negative things, which, by the way, I am very much in favor of. Now, if we're doing this in 2 years, very different conversation. If we're spoon-feeding applesauce to a grown man, you're going, hey, you should probably learn to cut your own T-bone. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
We need a little bit more. But to start without much weaponry, with, I think, one of the worst receiving groups in the sport and, patchwork at best O-line, especially at the tackle spots, I would do it just like this.
The goal for Cliff Kingsbury is to move the football, right? To move the sticks and to get points. Now, the points are going to have to come, but they're certainly moving the football. There's no question about that. 800-636-1067 if you want to hop in. We'll get to some of those numbers of passing being down around the NFL as well next. Also, one of the Commanders got an award today for his excellent performance this past week. We'll get into that on Grant and Danny.
Team with all three timeouts. Daniels. That's his caught. And loose is Noah Brown, the former Cowboy, inside the 45.
Couple of former LSU Tiger, Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks going to be playing in Cincinnati under the lights of primetime on Monday night. Joe Burrow and Jaden Daniels. We've been talking about Daniels, what's impressed you most on Grant and Danny. You can call us at 800-636-1067. Let's go to Drew in Graysonville. Drew, what have you liked about the young QB so far?
So I think there's two things that go together. One is the release. I mean, when he's thrown,
I think he's had one of the quickest releases in the league through two games. And the two is the lack of interceptions. I mean, he's putting the ball in safe places. And I'm hopeful that combination can then extend to downfield throws as the field opens up for him. But I think starting him slow and getting good at what he's doing and then increasing the playbook is really positive. And then from a touchdown to interception to touchdown ratio, obviously I'm going to get the touchdowns up, but keeping the interceptions down, those are killers. So it's been a lot of fun, and the sky's the limit for this kid.
Appreciate you.
Thank you, dude.
Yeah, we were beating up on Kingsbury a little bit last week about some of the things he does before the snap, and I think because of that, there's maybe a perception, and I'll just speak for myself, that I haven't liked the way he's gone about these first two games. And actually, as complicated as it sounds, I disagree with that completely. My issues with him philosophically are just his paradigm before the snap, on motion, on moving guys around, on how he goes about aligning things. What I have really liked is how he's called the games and the kind of positions he's put his quarterback in. I think it's a massive win for him over Shane Waldron or Sean Payton so far to see how the quarterbacks are performing. Also, even though, like I'm saying, if I'm giving out a pie for the lack of interceptions, a bigger piece of the pie is Kingsbury than Daniels because it's not high difficult throws. It's not like covered receivers that he's forcing the ball into with an aggressiveness percentage or anything. He only threw 4 picks last year in almost 330 attempts with 250 completions. Remember, it was a 40 touchdown, 4 pick year.
Yeah.
So this is part of the MO theoretically is he's going to see it open and drive it in there. Like, it's not overly anticipatory, but it's a low pick count. That's a big, big deal for a young quarterback.
Without a doubt. And it's part of the appeal because we talked about this when it comes to all the different quarterbacks leading up to the draft. This is a higher floor situation. Everybody that's been successful, with a couple exceptions here and there, but it happens. It usually goes where a quarterback's drafted in the first round, they go to a good situation. Think Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh, Russell Wilson in Seattle. You can go up and down, guys that have started off small, so to speak, at the helm of good teams where you're not asked to do too much. You throw it 20 times a game. Mostly you're checking it down, mostly quick stuff. Just, you know, get used to running this thing. Then more and more and more gets put on your plate. That's been the best path. That's not guaranteed, but that's been the most likely path to you ending up being pretty damn good in this league. There are exceptions, right? Peyton Manning goes to a terrible team, has a terrible first year, and then turns into one of the great passers of all time. There are different ways to do it, but the most hits are go to a good situation, not be asked to do too much, and then more and more gets put on your plate over time. That's the best course. And if there's a better one that comes along, we'll adjust and say so. That's what it looks like. It looks like this. It looks like we don't want you to drop back 40 times Eric Bieniemy to Sam Howell style and try to rifle it in there and see what happens. I'm not into that. I don't think that necessarily is the best path for growth, especially given the lack of talent on the outside.
Well, last year I think we learned that. I didn't know if that would be the best path or not. I liked the idea of actually giving your quarterback a lot of work.
Yeah, want to find out.
A lot on his plate, and it didn't work. Backfired, so it'll change how I feel moving forward for sure. Congratulations to Austin Seibert. He has been named the NFC Special Teams Player of the Week after making all 7 of his field goal attempts, a franchise record, 7 field goals. That's the second most ever made in an NFL game. There are multiple kickers who have made 8, but he and I think 8 other guys made 7, and so a historical performance for him. So actually, I wanted to play a little game here, Clary, if you don't mind. We get a little game show music. I would like to see if you guys in studio can name the Commanders kickers who have won the Special Teams Player of the Week award in the past who are joining Austin Seibert. I will tell you that there are a total of 6 of them, Danny.
Okay. Was that award around for Mark Mosley's time?
It was not.
Okay, so I'm not going to say
Mark
Mosley.
If it was,
Mosley.
He didn't win it. But he did win the MVP.
I was going to say he won the MVP.
So
he had to have won
it
at some
point. Award.
I'll start with my guy, Chip Low Miller.
That's 1. Clary?
I'm going to go with Dustin Hopkins.
That's 2.
Oh, good one. Did Nick Novak win it?
He did not. Clary, back to you.
This is going to be a deep cut, but didn't Nick Rose win one?
Definitely not, but you always talk about Nick Rose. Just so
I,
you
do,
know.
I do. I
Clary
do.
Clary loves Nick Rose.
I love Nick Rose.
He kicked like 2 games for Washington like
Nick
4
Rose?
Years ago.
I loved him.
You were a mark.
I loved him.
Did Ali Haji Sheik win it? No, I'm just doing bits about old school kickers.
You love talking about Ali Haji Sheik, if I could say that.
I brought it up three times in our 10 years plus together.
Nobody else in DC radio has brought him up that many times.
Damn right. I got a brand uphold. John Hall.
He did not, but that's a good guess.
Damn.
We're still looking for four more Commanders kickers.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to go back to the glory days. Sean Swisham.
Swisham.
Three more kickers to go. I will tell you that they are more recent than Sean Swisham.
Kai, a.k.a. Guy Forbath.
Guy won a special teams player of the week award.
There we go.
Was Graham Gano post Sean Swisham?
Oh,
Graham Gano. And that leaves us with just one ever kicker in this organization to win special teams player of the week.
Did the supremely jacked Joey Sly win one?
Ladies and gentlemen, Chip Lomiller, Sean Swisham, Graham Gano, Kai Forbath, Dustin Hopkins, Joey Sly, and Austin Seibert, your very select, illustrious group of kickers in this organization's history who have ever won that award.
Welcome to the club.
1 week ago.
Uh-huh. Not working.
Who is Austin Seibert? Let's look up what teams he's kicked for. This is going to be a problem all year. This week, 7 for 7.
Sports,
all,
dude.
Pretty much all chip shots on his brand new team. Game winner at the horn, special teams player of the week, hero in the locker room.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, you could have asked me, is Austin Seibert a professional lacrosse player that went to Syracuse, a dude at a fraternity somewhere in America, or a professional kicker, and I wouldn't have known.
The game that would have been perfect last week would have been NASCAR driver or guy trying out for the Commanders at kicker. Austin Seibert.
Austin Seibert.
Lock, you would have gone NASCAR driver.
100%.
He drives like the number 26 car. He's, for some reason,
Hendricks. For some reason.
Hendricks or Penske. But he's really good in the Xfinity series on Saturdays, I think.
Up and coming driver. Runs a little bit hot sometimes.
I'm happy for Austin Seibert.
It's cool, man.
Where are the Commanders' stars through a couple of weeks? John Allen, Daron Payne, Terry McLaurin, I'm paging you. We will get to that and the numbers down for passing on G&D as we continue on The Fan.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.